If you have an open seat at your table, will you raise your hand? We got some folks standing in the back. See, if you're looking for a seat, we've got a handful of seats up here. We've got a full house, which is a little bit amazing because I'm like, what possibly? I gave a 5-minute, sorry, I kind of was talking like I was on speed. And it was like, I haven't said anything in 5 minutes in my whole life, so that was a good test. But I was talking super fast. All right, here's what we're going to do. We got a full house, and Heather, do we have enough name tags to hand out? I know you already have name tags. This is for an activity we're going to do together. Heather, do you think we have enough extras to hand out? Yes or no? Okay, so here's what's going to happen. At your table, there's some white name tags. You already have a name tag with your name on it. What I want you to write on that other white name tag is 3 topics that you feel maybe, you know, you might be an expert in, but 3 topics you know a lot about. It can be anything. It can be anything at all. It can be gardening, Georgia football, whatever you want to do. 3 things you know a lot about, even if you're almost embarrassed to admit it. Like My Little Pony. You know, you're like, I know a lot. All right? It's okay. It's okay. There's no judgment here. I want you to write 3 topics that you know a lot about on that name tag. So if raise your hand if you do not have a name tag or a white, okay, good. We'll get you one. So write 3 topics that you know a lot about on that. Let's take a few more minutes and then I'll explain the rules of what we're going to do. Because we're actually going to do an activity together. And go ahead, once you've done it, go ahead and put it on your shirt opposite your name. So now you have 2. You have your... Yeah. You were hoping to hide this in your pocket, but you're not going to. You're going to have to... I can't wait to see what some of you are experts in. But anyway, we're going to do an exercise together just to demonstrate or practice the principle we just talked about. And... as you're doing that, let me set this up. One of the things that's hardest for us as mentors and facilitators is when the discussion hits a place that because of our own story or our own work, we know a lot about the topic, right? Maybe we're in a starting point group and we've hit on something that is particularly of interest to us and we've done a lot of reading and research on it. Maybe there's a particular part of the Renew curriculum, there's a particular curriculum we've done in small group where like this is our wheelhouse. You know, maybe it's the, you know, we're the financial person and we're doing the financial curriculum as a group. So we have done more work, we have more key insights in this area than we've ever had. And so the greatest pressure we feel as mentors and facilitators to give away our insight is in areas where we feel like we have a lot to give. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's an evil thing. What I want to show is that even when it comes to topics that we know well, there is still a way to drive self-discovery in the other person. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to pair up into groups of 2. And I really want you, I know when I'm in a crowd like this and someone asks me to do this, my reaction is, darn it, I wish you wouldn't make me do this. But tough luck. So this is payback. So... here's what I want you to do. I want you to find someone you don't know. So if you're here with your spouse, it can't be your spouse. It has to be someone you don't know. Now listen. Before you start making eye contact and matching up, so you're not, you know, musical chairs without a chair. So we'll find each other. It'll be okay. You'll get somebody. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to pair off with somebody, and the two of you are going to have a conversation. And we're going to give you 7 minutes each in your conversation. And you just pick who goes first. It doesn't matter. You're both going to go. And here's what I want you to do. What I want you to do is somebody who's going to start the conversation is going to ask about one of the 3 topics you listed. And it might go like Dean, who's going to join me later, if he was up here. Dean runs marathons, and I might say, you know, he knows a lot about running and training and so forth. So I might see on his name tag, running, training for marathons. So I might say, Dean, I've really been interested in getting into running, and I really want to know, tell me a little bit about running. Now, here are the rules. The other person can only ask questions. All right? And you may think and hear that and go, how is that even possible? All right? It's going to feel like torture at first, I think, for some people, especially when you're like, oh my gosh, I could talk about this for hours. But let me give you a framework. So JC, do you have that slide with the three questions on it? Here's a framework that you can use that's helpful. The first thing is you can ask questions for greater clarity. Hey, I'm just curious, like, before I get into any of that, where does your interest come from? What's your history with this? Why are you curious about this subject? Tell me a little bit. So you get them talking about it, okay? The second stage of questions is exploring possibilities. What's the kind of next step you would like to take? What would it look like in your mind to take a step towards whatever this thing is that you're interested in? And the ideal scenario is if you can land the plane on one action step in that 7 minutes. So the ideal scenario is they ask you about a subject you're an expert in, and you spend 7 minutes asking questions, and if you can get them by the 7 minutes, if you can get them to go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead and sign up for a 5K. You know what I mean? Like, all through questions, all right? So what this is an exercise in is how you can use questions to drive self-discovery even in areas where you have really key insights. So take 2 minutes, find a partner, face your chairs together, move anywhere in the room you want to, and I'll let you know when we're about to start. So take 2 minutes, find someone you don't know, pair off knee to knee so you're looking at the other person. Okay, raise your hand if you don't have a partner yet. Raise your hand. We got one up here. Who do we need? Right here. Right, these two. Raise your hand and look for someone. If you don't have a partner, someone fine. All right, waving each other down. Okay, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you to start, and I'll give you a two-minute warning. Okay, so choose who's going to go first, and we'll get started. Ready? 3, 2, 1... Start. Stop wherever you are in the conversation. Stop. Ready? Switch. Switch person. 3, 2, 1, go. You are. Go ahead and stop. Stop wherever you are. Mid-sentence. Go ahead and stop. Go ahead and move back to wherever you were. If you were sitting somewhere, feel free to move. All right. I know it's always kind of hard to settle a group of mentors and facilitators kind of down. You were getting in your groove there, so I'm going to properly introduce Dean in just a moment. But before I do, I want to take a few minutes, and I'm so curious how that was for a few of you. I mean, there's probably some of you that are like, please say 2 minutes. You know, there were probably some of you who really were fighting the urge to share something because you had something so good to share. But I'm just really curious, how was that act for some of you? Donald is roaming the room. Where are you, Donald? Hiding in the shadows. Donald is going to step into the light for us. And I'd love to hear from a couple of you who just want to share your experience, whether it was there was tension, whether it was easy. Like, what did you notice about? We got one right up here, Donald. So, can you speak into the mic just so all can hear you? On the jog, Donald, please. Is it on? Jace, both mics can be on, actually. Hello. Go ahead. You good?
Hello. Am I on?
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. Yeah.
Hi, I'm AJ. So I was with Eric here, and Eric knows about coffee, and I don't. I'm confused why everyone's addicted. So he did such good questions that I didn't really have a super defined goal at the beginning, and I realized he was helping me define a clear goal for what I wanted to know. And so I wrote that down, help them define a goal. I thought that was very
important. Yeah, that's great. I mean, that is an action, right? I mean, it's not love coffee. It's define goal is an outcome. That's great. Kirby?
I thought one of the key things with John and I here was that, you had a subject matter to dive into, and I think it's really important for us to get a subject matter from our mentees initially of saying, what do you want to get out of this relationship? And it was, you know, once you kind of saw it, it was kind of easy to, okay, I can dive in, I can get to second tier type of questions, I can really get deep with them. So I think the subject matter to define that up front was made it really easy for the question and answer for that 7 minutes.
That's a great insight. That's a great insight. We got one back there, a couple up here. Donald's going to take the shortest path to. All right, a couple more.
So I found this exercise horrifying.
Appreciate the honesty. Tell me why. That's right. The other people who were horrified. Tell me what was horrifying about it.
Yeah. No, Jerome did great. What's scary is that these are things that I care about.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that if the other person will see the things that I care about, they might actually take this in a different direction.
Right.
And not value the same thing. And so I want to construct questions that lead them to the things I care about. And so they still technically qualify as questions, but I know I'm actually just trying to manipulate the conversation.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
And
that is a huge, huge insight. Yeah, I mean, it's funny and it's true and it's absolutely huge.
So terrifying. Thank you. That was horrible.
That was great. Make sure you talk about, you know, that difference between a question and subject. That was good. That's a great insight. Yes.
Hi, my name is Audra Day. So the biggest thing that I learned was I was horrified when you said the only thing we could do was ask questions back, because I was like, I know all about all three of these topics and I'm ready to unload. I'm locked and loaded. And so Irene asked about insurance and I'm like, oh, boom, I got that one all day long. And it was interesting because if I would have unloaded on her, I would have missed a huge blessing. So she began, just through, by the second question, she starts to talk about something that she's going through in her life that's really important that we actually have in common. And so I was sitting there and I was like, and I stopped her and I said, this is a God moment and I'm going to tell you why when you finish. And so I keep asking her questions, and the more questions I'm asking her, the deeper it's going and it's ministering to me. And I think sometimes as the facilitator, as the mentor, you think that you're coming there to give something to someone else when really it's you that needs to be ministered to.
Yeah, amen.
And so through talking through Irene, one thing I've been struggling with is doing a major career change. And we actually work in the same field right now. And she's like, all of the reasons that I want to do the career change is the reason why she is doing it as well. And she's like, you need to just trust your heart and step out on faith, and you need to do it. So that just blessed me, and to learn to say that it's not about always unloading what
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
But it's actively listening and being engaged in the conversation.
Absolutely. You know, and that's great. That's great. And one of the things that you just described is, okay, so here you have this giant pool of expertise in this area of insurance that you described. And part of the problem with the curse of knowledge is you have way more to share than potentially this person needs. And if you create that curiosity in between, by the time you end up giving something away, you're giving away what they need, not backing up the truck and dumping everything you know. But let me step back and tell you about the principle of why we have insurance in the world. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's not what I needed. But by creating that curiosity on the front end, if there is a time for you to share a key insight, it's the most effective key insight you can share, right? And so oftentimes when we carry into our facilitation, our group leadership, our mentoring, with that curse of knowledge is we have so much more to share that if we don't pause and create that curiosity, we end up sharing maybe even an answer that they weren't even seeking. They were actually, and we might even find out that's not even really what they're after. They're after something else, like you described. That's great. Maybe one more right here.
Hi, my name's Robin. I found it to be fairly easy, and I was very confused about what we were doing. I kept, you know, worrying. I don't get this. I found the minute I focused on her and said, I want to know about her and what she's thinking and what she, what I wanted to know about her, and that changed and made it very easy to ask questions.
Right.
I don't, you know.
Yeah, that's, and I mean, one of the things you hear us talk about a lot in our leader training here is maintaining a posture of curiosity. And one of the things that forces us to stay others-centered are asking those genuine and sincere questions. Because when I'm genuinely and sincerely curious about you and asking questions, discovery-based questions about you, it helps me keep centered on you and your needs, right? So, excellent. Thank you. Well, let me introduce Dean Harbury here, who's sitting to my right. Dean has been a coach and mentor for me. He's a professional coach, and he has been a coach for me for about 5 to 6 years now, and been a huge influence on my life. One of the people who has taught me about questions, and also happens to be in the room, is Fran LaMattina. Fran, sitting up front, can you stand up and wave, Fran? Because before Dean, Fran tried to help me for about 5 years, who is also a professional coach. And actually, Fran introduced me to Dean, and I think she felt like, I've done as much as I can do. Dean, it's your turn. So I have the privilege of having probably the last decade of wisdom and leadership shaping in the room here today. Both of these people are experts at question asking. And I want to just give Dean, who really sort of has made this a discipline in his practice, but also kind of challenged me as a leader to really emphasize this. Would you share with us maybe like your top two or three things that kind of have surfaced out of this discipline of asking questions and the value of it?
Sure. Thank you so much. And I, too, owe a great debt to Fran. So thank you, Fran, for all that you've done for me. Fran was my coach when I started becoming a coach, and so very grateful for her. Yeah, there's a verse in Proverbs 11 that says, "He who is wise wins souls." And in that word wisdom in the Hebrew, the technical translation there is skill. And so I realized from a coaching perspective, because I spend all my day, every day, both in Christian and non-Christian environments, coaching people. And just so you know, I feel much like the mouse on the back of an elephant, okay? Because I get a great view of the jungle, but it's not because of my own size or stature, you know? But writing with some of these people and working with them, it really helps. Well, anyway, so I realized, you know, becoming really good at questioning is a skill. And particularly in the helper industry, it's like, well, why would we do that? And what is it that we're really after? Like, what is the hope for outcome for the work that you do in the leadership you provide here at North Point? What is it?
Growing relationship with Jesus Christ.
Okay.
First 30 seconds right. of the 5-minute talk.
And what has to happen, right? It just means that we are we're really helping to facilitate human change. So I'm just going to give you one other thought here and turn this back over to Justin. But if you look at the word repentance, for example, in the Greek, and if I were to ask, well, what do you think repentance means? Most people don't get it right. The literal definition of metanoia in Greek, it looks like metanoia when you write it out in English, is a change of mind. And whenever we have a change of mind, it's as though all of our behaviors follow behind that change. So you can imagine the Roman soldier watching Jesus on the cross, and when he dies, and it says on the cross, and it says the huge rocks were split, and people that were dead were raised from the grave. And can you imagine being that guy and said, hey, I killed you last week. What are you doing here? You know? It was with those insights, that change of mind, that he said, oh my gosh, this was the Son of God. Okay, so when we have those changes of that nature in thinking, we have a change of mind. That's what helps to facilitate. So the one illustration I love to give, just as we talk about questions, is what happened in the garden. Because the garden was really the birthplace of 2-to-1 or Renew Ministry, or, you know, it was really the birthplace of those ministries. Because when Adam and Eve sinned, God comes to the garden. What did he do? He asked questions. He said, Adam, where are you? Adam, what have you done? And I love to ask this question. Did God not know where Adam was? Did he not know what he did? What was the purpose of those questions? What was it that God was really after in the end? And it is about redemption. It's about human change. It's about moving from where we are to a better place. So those are my thoughts.
All right. Well, now we want to kind of put it out there for any questions that you all have. And we promise we won't just ask questions in return. That'd be frustrating. We get that.
So if you have questions, go ahead and raise your hand. Donald will bring it around, and we'll try to talk about it. As you think about that, one of the things I want to talk about is what you shared about, you know, there's questions, there's open-ended discovery-based questions, and then there's questions that we can use to manipulate the conversation to our own ends. And I remember just the whole, that even in the practice and discipline of asking questions, you can actually kind of place your own agenda in that discipline and try to steer the conversation, and it'll feel just as funky as if you didn't ask questions. And I remember a particular incident where Dean was coaching me through where I needed to approach a colleague on a difficult situation, and Dean was really, you know, emphasizing, you don't have all the information. You need to start the conversation with curiosity and really ask discovery-based questions, even if the conclusion is the same as what you've already drawn or close to what you've already drawn. You can only sit there in confidence having heard the other side of the story. And so one of the things, you know, he said is, I think he sensed that I wasn't ready to have this conversation, because I remember him saying, why don't you practice on me and pretend I'm the person? And my question was like, well, a competent individual would have done X. You did Y. Can you explain that? He's like, that's not really open-ended. Do you... probably can't see that, but that's a little bit closed. You know, so we can kind of place our own agendas in our questions, which is something to guard for. And when we care deeply about the subject, or sometimes in ministry, as you guys have probably felt before, part of the reason you're drawn to the ministry you're doing is because in all likelihood, God met you there at some point in your history. And you want for other people the same epiphany and the same growth that you experienced. And so when you get to that place, you want something righteous for them. But they may not be at the same place you were when God met you there. And so sometimes it's kind of like that person that won't stop talking about the restaurant you haven't tried, that they're like, why haven't you tried it? Why haven't you tried it? Why haven't you tried it? And, you know, sometimes we can push for God to do something just like he did to us, not for bad reasons, but because it changed our life. And we're like, we want you to experience it too. And so sometimes we carry that agenda into our ministry and manipulate the circumstances, or we drive to like, hey, we're not leaving this until you discover what I discovered. And really when we lay that agenda down and say, God, what are you up to here? And part of that is just discovered by the questions I'm asking. So a couple things to think about. Did we have a hand right here, Donald, right in front of you, right there. A question so about questions.
What would be some practical tools and resources if we want to get better at asking questions that we could use?
Yeah, I mean, there's honestly, nowadays, if you just Google, you know, books on asking good questions, or which I've bought several of, you know, or, and they just, there's people that have written lists and lists, or if you Google great coaching questions, because a lot of people in the coaching industry have really come up with a list of questions, because really coaching is the same thing we're doing in mentoring and facilitating. And so there are innumerable lists out there. And honestly, what I did was I just did a search of, hey, great coaching questions. I pulled it down and I just cut and pasted some of my favorites and started trying to mix those into my own facilitation. And honestly, just make it like a discipline or practice to kind of say, hey, I wonder if I can use three or four of these new questions and see what they generate. I think one of the most helpful questions Dean regularly asked me, it's a question that he asks it in various forms. But like if I'm complaining about a situation or a person, or I'm frustrated, or I'm in a sort of a victim posture or whatever, like Dean will say, if I were in your shoes, how would you advise me right now? And it just all of a sudden, or if I was that other person, what would you be telling me right now? What's great about that question is it forces a person to break out of the rut of whatever it is that their brain has been thinking, and it makes them work to gain empathy from a different perspective. And honestly, it's one of the questions I feel like I go to most often, is a question that forces a kind of thinking that puts the person in whatever the other shoes look like, whether that's the other shoes of an individual or whether it's even the other shoes, my shoes. Like, come over to this side of the table and advise someone like you about this. And it's amazing what that unlocks in facilitation or in mentoring,
because it forces you, you know, in your private thoughts, you kind of get in these grooves and these ruts and these conclusions based on the data. And unless someone comes in there and forces you to take a different perspective sometimes, it's hard to do that, right? And those questions that force that perspective can be really, really helpful. Donald, and then we got one back there, a couple up front.
What types of questions or how do you handle the situation when the person doesn't like to respond? For example, I don't know, a 17-year-old who doesn't want to say anything, you know, that type of situation. The person just doesn't want to answer questions or come out of their shell. Are there any tools to help get that, or how much silence is not too awkward?
Hypothetically, like a 17-year-old potentially, yeah. well, I only have a 16-year-old, so I can't speak to that, but Dean has grown children, and one of the things Dean has talked about with me is that how much these tools make a difference in parenting, and he tells a story about control of conversations. Why don't you share from your experience?
Yeah. first of all, I'll just make the statement. Just like we said in Proverbs 11, you know, he who is wise wins souls. It's a skill. I look at questioning as a professional activity, and if you want to get really good at tennis, what do you got to do? You got to practice. You have to do the same thing with questions. People at times feel off guard or off put by questions because of the quality of the questions maybe that they're exposed to. All right, so you can do anything you want with questions. You can shame a person, you can judge a person, you know, you can tell them off, you can actually suggest things like, well, why didn't you take this as a course of action, right? And that's really telling in disguise. So to get really good at the questioning and to soften people up who may not be so soft, here's the principles. You always have to make it in their best interest, okay? You have to make it about them, and I think Justin really pointed this out before. And so if you said, you know, if you asked a question like, well, why did you do that? Well, they already know they're in trouble. And if God had done that to Adam and Eve, what would they have done? They would have run deeper into the weeds, right, into the bushes. But if you ask what-based questions versus why-based questions, which have the absence of judgment associated with them, like, you know, well, what were you thinking when you made that decision? Or what was the data, you know, that you contemplated before you, you know, made that step? You see, in that case, you're promoting dialogue, not monologue. So if you're asking questions in such a way that promote monologue, you can pretty well bet that's not a very good quality question. So the better we get about making it about them and not making it about me, just creates more of a safe environment.
Yeah, and I think, are you talking about a child you're raising potentially? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I would say I found it, you know, obviously it's challenging when it's your children because the emotional skin in the game is so different, and it's hard not to pass judgment on your kids because you've watched them and you know a stupid decision when you see it. And so, and you made them, you know, when you were 17. But, you know, I think one of the things that I'm working on with my children is realizing that in parenting, it's really, really easy for me to get in the groove of responding to behaviors. Because so much of parenting, especially when they're younger, is behavioral management, right? I mean, there's just no reasoning with them. It's like you don't run out in the street because, and I can't explain why. I don't know why you want to do it, but I can't tell you, you're too young. So a lot of what we're conditioned as parents when they're younger is very behavior management focused. And all of a sudden overnight in adolescence, at least what I experienced was, that style of parenting was antiquated like in an instant. And so I think what I had to switch to was becoming curious about the beliefs that were driving the values that were driving the behaviors. And so the questions that I started asking were less about the behaviors, even when they frustrated me, and trying to dig deeper into what is it that you value or believe that caused you to act in that way. And so I think it's helped, you know, I'm like all of us parents, we're all humbled by the fact that we're screwing up all the time. But I will tell you, I had to find a new toolbox because the behavior management style was ineffective overnight. And I think the curiosity about what is it you value and what is it you believe, and it's hard to hear when those values and beliefs aren't the values and beliefs that I want for them, but I also have to remember. And I don't know if you do this, but in parenting, one of the things that I found struggling with is I try to I try to put my 44-year-old experiences and brain on my 16-year-old son. And I expect him to behave with all of the experiences that I have of four decades right now. And I don't even, it's interesting. I think when I project back to my 16-year-old self, I'm like, man, you're way ahead. I was a way bigger screw-up than you. Yeah, so, anyway.
Yeah, I'll just add one little story to that, because when my son was 14 years old, he decided that he was smart enough, intelligent enough, he could, you know, he'd make all of his own decisions as long as mom and dad would continue to fund every activity. And it was a really difficult thing. And so in trying to raise teenagers, I remember my mentor at the time, I would tell him, like, oh, my gosh, I just got so upset at my kid because, you know, when I said to him, hey, you're not going to hang around those kids, he said, oh, yeah, Dad, what are you going to do? Follow me around at school? Do you have enough vacation time where you can, like, take off and, like, follow me around? This is a true story. And I got really upset. And so my mentor said, okay, Dean, how can you make it about him instead of making it about you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he gave me this little lesson on what it meant to be charge neutral when you're asking a good question. Okay, so if any of our questions are loaded with negative emotion, it could be anger, it could be fear, it could be anxiety, it could be frustration, it just goes against the grain of creating that dialogue that we talked about before. So ever since then, which was back in the 1990s until this day, I'm still working on being charge neutral, particularly in conflict scenarios with the use of questions.
That's a great point. Yes, right up here. How much time do we have, Heather? Sorry. Okay, thanks.
Hi, I know I'm not one take it off the subject, but since we were talking about parenting, my wife and I, we have 7 children, and one of the things that that we recognize is that first we had to look at it and say, okay, these are our children, but God made them and he entrusted us to raise them. So first of all, we looked at the ownership. They belong to God, but we are the stewards over the children. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing that we had to understand. And then the second thing is that there are people too, they have feelings, they have emotions, they're just little people. That's the only difference. We just have more experience.
Right.
So the thing is, like you said, as far as the behavior, finding the belief system, one thing we had to understand is, what do we want for our children? What is the vision that we have? What are the type of people that we want them to be? And so when we discover that, of course, through the scriptures, then we begin to shape and mold our visions, our actions, the type of things that we teach around the house, the way we live as parents to be an example. And so let me just give you a quick example. So if we want them to have goals and visions, so then we do, okay, what is your goal and vision? Let's write these goals. If they are unable at this time to discover what that is, then we'll write one for them. And then we'll paste it on a wall from repetition for them to see, okay, look, this is the standard. This is what it is that we want for your life until they begin to develop and believe and begin to understand that. So my whole point of saying all of this is to see what the ownership is, what our roles are as parents, and have a vision for them. We cast that vision for them and see, and we shape them. A lot of times their behaviors, it can be just very a part of their gift or talents. And so if we can recognize that at an early age, we can begin to cultivate that and develop it and stir it in that direction. For instance, you have a kid that's getting in trouble in class all the time for, joking and anything. Okay, that might be a gift. But then we can coach them into how they can use that gift, not to be disruptive, but let's challenge this in a different direction and create a platform for them to be able to grow and develop in that gift. That's all.
Hey, great thought. Those are great thoughts. We have time. Sorry, we have time for one more. And just so you know, Dean and I will hang out down front. I know we can't get to everybody. And if you want to stick around for a few minutes as we transition, we're happy to share whatever we can. But we'll have to make this the last one.
So in starting point, we always reach that time when they're like, "Okay, you've asked me all these questions, but I really want to hear what you believe."
Yeah.
And even though it is the exception to the rule, I think there are appropriate times to share.
Yeah.
So the last group, we had an apprentice ask me, how do I know?
Yeah.
And all I can give them is I just trust the Holy Spirit, which is not a very good answer to their question. But that's all I know to say, is like you just know there's that time when I'm not going to ask a question right here, I'm going to share from my experience. Is there like a time, like this is the time to share instead of ask questions?
Good to see you, Jason, by the way.
I think what you're talking about is I don't know of a great formula. I don't think relying on the Holy Spirit is a bad answer. I know it's not always a helpful answer for some people, but I do think it's something that over time you develop an intuition. And part of what I use as a guide is, you know, when you gauge the sincerity and you realize that if I answer this question with another question, I'm going to tempt them to get frustrated. And I think, you know, some of that depends on your emotional intelligence radar and how good it gets at that. But, like, I you know, when I look at the Gospels, you just see times where people were very direct and sincere with Jesus. And it's like, and in those moments, like, he's direct back. You know, but there's other times he recognizes that they're asking a question that's coming from a different motive, or they're not even, they're playing games or something. And in those moments, he goes to a question that forces them over into what I believe God thinks, or Christ thought was the right lane. Like, you're coming at it this way, I'm going to ask you a question and force you to wrestle with the angle that you need to be coming at this at. But sometimes you see people go directly to Jesus and say, I'm curious about this direct thing. And it's almost like I feel like Jesus could sense the sincerity and the work had been done. And so at that point, to ask a question just for the sake of applying a technique would have been frustrating. And so I think in those moments when I go, this is potentially going to create more frustration than be helpful, then I share. That's my guideline.
I'll just add one piece. 9 times out of 10, when we're telling versus asking questions, we're meeting our needs, not theirs. Okay? But there's one famous author named Andy Stanley that I've drawn from in moments like this. So in his book, Communicating for a Change, he talked about, you know, hey, when I'm speaking and when I get stuck, I've learned to ask and self-coach with this one question. And here's the question. He asks, what do they need right now? Well, I thought, hey, that's a great question to ask even when we're across the table, whether it's Starting Point, Renew, you know, 2-to-1, whatever. And I've learned to ask that question, what is it that they really need right now? And if the answer to my question is a little bit of clarity, then maybe that is the Holy Spirit working in us to try and guide us, you know, to give them what they need at the right time versus frustrating them with the wrong technique per se.
Yeah. My problem with that, I mean, that's the right question. My problem with that question was I'd always answer it, they need another lecture from me, you know? So, like, I think inserting that space of curiosity that we talked about that's, like, just for me because I'm an extrovert, inserting that curiosity, even when it's time to share, I know that I'm more confident that I'm sharing something that's helpful versus something that I'm excited to show off. Look at this. Look at the big brain, you know. You know.
Make it about them.
All right. We're done. Wrap it up, says Heather. Okay. Thank you. Dean and I will be up front. If you have a couple things you want unanswered, sorry we couldn't get to everybody. Thanks for your patience, and you're transitioning back to the next session.